Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
And Mahomes crushes it. Center field hits. Don't pitch to that man.
They got his slider and hit it out of the park in center field. When he hits one, the many times he hits the second one. And the first base open, they elected a pitch to him. It goes from 7-1 to 10-1. The second home run of the night for Aloy.
Man, oh man, is he fun to watch.
2 3-run homers. He's 3-for-4 with 6 driven in. Have a night, Aloy.
Middays on the Score.
You know that voice. That is the voice of an old friend. Steve Stone is on Twitter, at Steve Stone. The White Sox television analyst joins us on the Al Pamani Ford Hotline. Al Pamani Ford, over 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Stoney, how are you?
Good, Dan. How are you? I'm pretty excited about tonight. I think there's a few people in town that feel the same way.
What are you excited most to see?
I'm just excited to see these two teams play one another and take a look at exactly where they are at a given point. You know, you look back to the Cubs in their rebuild, and before Theo got there, I think he got there in October of 2011, they were 71-91 in that year before he got there. And then they tore it down, and they won 61 games. They lost 101 in 2012, 66-95 in 13, 73-89 in 14. But then their rebuild was accelerated because John Lester came on the market. Theo knew what a great postseason pitcher he was. He went out and got him, probably didn't want to spend that kind of money before the team was ready to win. But all of a sudden, they go 97-65 in 2015. We all know what happened in 2016. That's the progression of the Cubs. The Sox, in a similar progression, are in the third year of a five-year. I don't believe it's going to be quite as accelerated because of the injuries to Kopech and Rodon. I mean, I think that's set this rebuild back a bit. So where I thought next year they would be probably knocking at the door for a playoff spot, and they still might be, those two pitching injuries really hurt the progression of the rebuild. But it doesn't diminish what this team has done, and they're pretty much on the same kind of path when the Cubs went 73-89 in 2014. So that puts in perspective where the Sox are at this point, and they're looking at the finished product and a contending team and a very good Cub team, and they're thinking about Houston and how many times they lost 100 games before they won the World Series, and Kansas City, how many times they lost 100 games, how futile they were from 85 to the point where they finally won the World Series. And so they're looking at some teams, and there's some history in a rebuild. No team has ever won in a complete teardown in a rebuild. The Sox won't be the first, but they're getting there, and it's been an exciting year. And the younger players on this team are starting to make a difference. And Moncada is hurt right now. I don't know how badly he is hurt. Hopefully it's not too bad. But Jimenez is really fun to watch. And Tim Anderson is really fun to watch. He's an exciting player. So I think the Sox are in pretty good shape. And the rebuild is going pretty much as expected, a little more slowly than most Sox fans would want. But it's pretty good and it's pretty exciting. And, you know, I think everybody yearns for the day when you see both of these teams in the World Series, and maybe not that far off.
Steve, great to have you on. Great to talk with you. One of the things I'm real interested in seeing the White Sox deal with over the next 12 to 14 to 15 months is getting pitching back, but understanding that you can't necessarily depend on innings from guys like Kopech or Rodon or even Cease as he works in, and finding the rest of those innings. Does that mean veteran starter over the offseason or perhaps in a trade to you? How do they handle the reinvigoration of some young pitching into that team?
Well, one of the keys to evaluation is to understand who you have to or would like to trade going forward for something you really need today. And you got to make that decision, and that's the veteran scouts and the talent evaluators and all the guys that sit in the computer room and quantify what a guy is going to do going forward. Because everybody pretty much knows what a guy can do today. Tell me what he's going to do next year and the year after. And then you figure out who's going to be part of your past, who's going to be in your rearview mirror, and who should be forward thinking as you move forward in your rebuild. So that's the art of both player development, and that's the art of scouting. And people don't realize that you have to scout your own system a whole lot better than you scout everybody else's system, because I think you've got reports on all of these guys coming through from every organization. You know exactly what they've done. Scouting your own system is an art. I think the Sox are getting better at it, but if you don't scout your own system effectively, you wind up making bad trades. You don't want to make bad trades when you're knocking at the door of playoff contention, and so that's what the Sox are going through now. And that's one of the things. And you talk about getting a quality starter. Everybody wants a quality starter. Brian Cashman just got Encarnacion. He's got four of the biggest right-handed bangers around. He's got Stanton and Judge coming back. He's got Sanchez. Now he has Encarnacion. They could have used a left-hander, but they got a right-handed banger. Maybe to keep him away from Tampa Bay, maybe not. Who knows where Encarnacion would have gone. But the point is, now they're looking for starting pitching. There's a lot of teams in contention looking for that one big starter. Now, it's going to be costly, and the Sox aren't really ready to win quite yet, so I don't know if they're going out and getting that guy. And also, you know, they've spent a great deal of time building up their prospect roster and building up their talent in the minor leagues. I'm not sure if they want to shelve it all and pay the price of going out. For instance, there's a lot of people going to get Madison Bumgarner, knowing that probably you only have him from this point on to the end of the year. They're going to have to pay dearly for him if that's the guy that they're going out to get. Marcus Stroman, another one of those guys. Maybe he won't cost quite as much, but he will cost you something. So it depends on how much of your future you want to give up. Some teams who are ready to win now are going to give up a whole lot of their future. You don't have to look any further than Jose Quintana for Dylan Cease and Eloy Jimenez. I mean, that's the typical a lot of today for down the road. Well, for the Sox, we're seeing down the road, and you're going to see Dylan Cease later on. I don't say you're going to see him immediately, but you'll see him down the road. And Eloy Jimenez has shown what he can do. But the Cubs had to make that deal, and they did because they wanted to win it all. And Theo is terrific. He's a wonderful president. Jed Hoyer is a very good general manager, and together they work well. Together they give Joe Maddon what he needs to put this team in contention though these last 5 years. But there were some dismal times under Theo. We can't forget that. We can't go through revisionist history and say it happened overnight, because it doesn't.
Steve, I know yesterday you heard our conversation with Ben Lindbergh about the book that he and Travis Sawchik wrote called The MVP Machine, where the cutting edge of player development, of what these new cameras, what the new application of information is doing to radically change ball players into becoming what scouts maybe never thought they could. Some players themselves only find out of desperation. If you could look back at your career, if you were always eager to have data, to have information and incorporate it, had you been in the pitch lab, had you seen your curveball come out of your hand with every frame by frame, what would you have wanted to know about yourself that would have maximized what you had?
Well, first of all, I'm going to make a confession here, but please don't tell Jason. He and I think a lot alike on a lot of different things. He believes that I'm a dinosaur and I don't want to change. That really isn't the case. You know, when TrackMan first came out, there were some bugs in it, and it didn't work exceptionally well, but then it started to work very well. When Rapsodo came out, it also didn't work particularly well. There was a few things it couldn't quantify, but now with greater development, this is becoming state-of-the-art. Most teams have it. A lot of academies have it. I mean, it's something where you can quantify spin rate on all of your pitches. And so when you blend radar and optical units, you get to the point where you understand each and every pitch. You understand the spin rates. You understand the effect of the hitter on spin rates. You understand the lack thereof on spin rates. And yes, it would have been wonderfully informative and useful for me. I mean, pitch sequencing is coming on and getting more and more of something that you look at. And you say to yourself, you know what, maybe there's something about it. Is it 3 miles an hour? Is it 6 miles an hour between one pitch to the other? What's the most effective way to do it? Then you get into effective velocity, Dan, and you look at that and you say, what is the most effective velocity for the hitter, and how can I disrupt that? And you look at all of those things and you say to yourself, you know, there's something here. you would have to be a moron to stick your head in the sand and realize that with all of these new developments and the refinements of them, that it can't help the performers. Now, it's not going to give you any more talent. What it's going to do is refine the talent you have. And when you look at perceived velocity, that's something, you look at something that's up and in, you say to yourself, you got to go out and get it. You got to hit the ball out in front if you're throwing the ball up and in, as opposed to a ball down the middle or a ball low and away. You have more time on a ball low and away. This is not revolutionary. We've known that for a long time. But seeing it and quantifying it and understanding exactly what you have to do to get better, it takes players to the next level. It takes guys already with talent, and it makes them more talented. And you look at all of these things and you say, wait a second, this is a new generation that's coming in of knowledge to help the players. Now, one of the things that Jason also doesn't know is during spring training, I had the opportunity to sit with a guy that had more degrees in things that I couldn't pronounce, but one of them was a doctorate of biomechanics. He had more doctorates than I knew. And he explained to me exactly what this team was doing to get the most out of their players. Now, you can guess there's 15 teams in Arizona, so guess which one it is. I'm not going to tell you because most of these teams guard their secrets preciously. They view them as something that they have exclusively, and they're hiring these guys with many, many doctorates, not only biomechanics, but every other aspect of it. Dan, you mentioned the cameras, and you mentioned what they're doing with it. You mentioned how they break down exactly what a hitter and a pitcher does and how to get better in each and every situation. I mean, just take a look at Justin Turner and his career. You just saw him up close in a four-game series against the Cubs. He was with Baltimore. He was with the Mets. He was a good hitter. He just wasn't a great hitter. Well, right now, in 6 years with the Dodgers, he's had 4 years over 300 and 1 year at 294. This is a guy that's suddenly become a force. The bat speed has gotten better. I'm not sure if he's using that axe handle, but a lot of guys are. Bregman is in Houston. That's a revolutionary thing, and they're talking to the hitters about increasing bat speed. Does it do it consistently? I don't really know, but I'd be willing to try. I was willing to try everything because a lot of times in my career, I wasn't particularly good. So I had to try everything, and some of them worked and some of them didn't. But if someone said to me, this will work for you, I tried it. And then you discard some, and then you work with some. And, you know, Trevor Bauer's player of the week this week. You might not like his personality. You have to love his stuff. Yet Cleveland is trying to move him. He's one of the guys that's out there that you can have. It's going to cost you a bundle, but you can have him for a number of different reasons. But you can't deny his stuff. And he was one of the earliest proponents of this. And Dan, you talked about Driveline, and that's exactly what Ben Lindbergh was saying. Driveline helps some guys, but there's guys that go to Driveline that it doesn't help. You can't help everybody, but you can help a few, and you can make guys who wouldn't be as good as they appear to be now, you can make those guys a whole lot better.
Steve, it sounds like you talked to a lot of people who are on the bleeding edge of some of this. Do you have any sense of what could be next? I mean, now that we've blended these radar and optical cameras together, we've got teams really forging into the unknown. Like, what would you as a former player, broadcaster, and kind of understander of this like to see be the next area of attack?
Understanding circadian rhythms, to me, is one of the keys. In other words, you leave on an off day. You leave at 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night. You get to a place, and it's an off day. You get to a place, you can't have dinner, your dinner's on the plane, or it's a hamburger on the way to the airport, and maybe you're not resting as well as you would rest, and maybe the next day it doesn't affect you, but the second day it probably does. Understanding circadian rhythms and what it does to the body is something that may be the next generation of what we're talking about. That's one of the things that I'd be very interested in. That and the fact that the mind still has many frontiers to delve into. And, you know, guys like Bob Tewksbury wrote a book on it, and there's a lot of guys, there's a lot of sports psychologists that delve into it. But getting a guy to win with less than his best is sitting sometimes not necessarily out of his arm, but out of his head, and understanding exactly what you can do to refine that. And you don't have to be a genius to go through these things. You have to be just open to some of the things that right now we don't delve into. But again, this thing we're talking about and Ben Lindbergh is talking about in the MVP machine, those are things that seem to be revolutionary, but yet, you know, sabermetricians have been around for quite some time. Bill James was, I think, the second guy that talked about it, and it worked out very well. However, it doesn't work out all the time. I mean, Oakland's been competitive. What have they won? One playoff series? And yet everybody says, well, small market. Well, Tampa Bay's a small market, too, and they're doing it real well. And Florida was a very small market when they happened to win in 97. They didn't spend, or the second time they won, 2003, they didn't spend a lot of money on that team. And so it's not always spending money. The year that the Colorado and Arizona played to go to the World Series, they were both in the $50 million as far as payroll was concerned. They weren't spending a great deal of money. So everybody is catching up to everybody else. There's a certain amount that's proprietary with these organizations. They guard that judiciously. And there's other things that's out there for everybody to use. But there's a lot of things that are changing in the game. And, you know, one of the things, guys, that I really want to talk about, I call it the Ketel Marte syndrome. You know, for 4 years, Ketel Marte hit 22 home runs, drove in 127 runs in almost 1,400 at-bats, 1,399 to be exact. That's 402 games. So 22 home runs, 127 runs batted in. 71 games this year, 71 games, 20 home runs, 50 runs batted in, 290 at-bats. What is that a product of? The liveliest baseball we've had in the history of our game. There's no debate about that. How it got that way, you can debate that. But you can't debate. You cannot debate it's the liveliest baseball we had in our history. And, guys, I'll tell you one thing, and this is where we get back to Ben Lindbergh. If something doesn't change, maple bats, the liveliest baseball we had in our history, some call it the slippery ball, and max effort era for pitchers, guys falling off the mound to their glove side, left-handers to third base, right-handers to first base. They can't defend themselves. If we don't change something, what's going to happen is a catastrophic event on the mound. You're going to see a pitcher put into a coma and possibly killed within the next 5 years and maybe sooner. Guys cannot defend themselves, guys. And this is with exit velocity being sometimes between 110 and 115 miles an hour, a pitcher can barely see the ball. Kluber said the ball that broke his forearm, he saw as a shadow. Other pitchers don't see it at all. Jay Happ almost lost his career right under his pitching arm. Jose Abreu hit one at 111. It was out in center field before he could react. You watch the replay. Jose cringed when he hit the ball, and I think Happ will cringe every time he sees it. It's going to happen. No ifs, ands, or buts. And I'm going to tell you that they're scoring more runs than ever. We're going to fly by the home run totals in the history of this game. And it's no mistake that Ketel Marte in 4 years hits 22 home runs. He's hit 20 already in 71 games. This is going on, and fans like home runs. That's terrific. You got to defend the pitchers. He's 55 feet away from the plate when he delivers the baseball. The idea of the hot corner, 90 feet away at third base, don't tell me about the hot corner. The hot corner's in the middle of the mound, and there's going to be something terrible happen, and it's going to be in the not-too-distant future. Unless, as Ben Lindbergh said, to get back and away from slug ball, to get back to the art and the beauty of baseball, you might have to deaden the baseball, because otherwise it's not going to end well.
It's really critical what you say, too, about pitchers not caring about being in a defensive position, because that is really a component of driveline. It's when they do their pull downs and when they're doing the weighted balls, everything, even for the youngest ages, as hard as you can all the time, and all that matters is generating maximum velocity with everything you have, defensive stance be damned, and they're literally not seeing the ball. So it isn't even a matter of some of these other things where they're being told and coached to not care about what happens after it leaves your hand.
Well, the guys that are coaching them that don't care aren't guys who stood out there with this exit velocity that we have today. With the hitters being bigger, stronger, faster, and quicker than ever before, with guys like Aaron Judge, who's absolutely a monster, with Giancarlo Stanton, who's a monster. I mean, these guys are big and they're strong. Their bat speed is incredible. The exit velocity is otherworldly. I don't care if a guy hits the ball. Look, what's the largest center field in baseball is 420 feet. I think it's in Detroit. Maybe there's another one or two that's out there, the same thing. Doesn't matter to me if a guy hits one 425 or hits it 525. I don't care. A home run's a home run. What I care about is how quickly it gets back to me, and can I see it? Can I defend myself? And the answer is no, you cannot defend yourself. So, again, this is not, you know, I don't know exactly how the ball got the way it is. I just know they're using the major league ball in AAA. Look at the home run totals in AAA this year. They're going to dwarf the home run totals historically in baseball. Look at the home runs in the major leagues. Probably by the beginning of September, we're going to go by and exceed the home run totals ever in this game. There's no mistaking the fact that there are more home runs hit. Just take a look at the opposite field home runs. Take a look at the upper deck home runs. Take a look at the home runs going farther than they've ever gone before. I mean, the second baseman from Boston, Chavis, hit a home run that went almost 470 feet. It was in his first week in the major leagues. Is he a bomber? Well, look at the numbers now. He's strong. I'm not sure he's that big a bomber. but the ball is going farther, it's getting there faster, and it's doing everything to an excess now. And if you want to get out of what the steroid era was, when everybody was hitting home runs, when guys who hit 20 were hitting 40, you know, Greg Vaughn in 98 had the quietest 50 home runs in the history of this game. People don't know who he is. They don't know he hit 50 home runs, but he did, because McGuire and Sosa were battling one another to see who could get 70 and 66, which is how it happened. That was 1998. If you want to go back to the steroid era of this game, you're heading there with this game now. The game is using some, it's losing some of its beauty. I don't like to see strikeouts, walks, and home runs. I mean, they're nice on occasion. I like to see something brought back to the game that it shows the beauty of the game. That's my own personal feeling. I don't say diminish all of these new things that are coming into the game. I mean, this is great, and Driveline has some wonderful ideas, and you can still have Driveline, but You have to have some sense into this game, and you have to get back to the beauty of the game. That's my own feeling. That's what I think, and we'll see what happens with this game as moving forward.
Strong stuff from Steve Stone.
Thanks,
we
Stoney.
Appreciate the time, Stoney, and look forward to your commentary in the series. Thanks.
Thanks, guys. I'm looking forward to it, and have a good show.
That is Steve Stone. Wow.
He's right.
Predicting
he's
catastrophe,
right.
And it's hard to argue against it.
Exit velocities continue to climb, and the ball is absolutely juiced out of its mind. There's no doubt about it.
You know, something's happening in baseball that I did not recognize. Did you know a great player in his prime is now bad?
No. In his prime?
It's weird.
Okay.
It's weird. Like a legitimately great MLB player over the last couple years, and this has gone completely unnoticed, a guy who is, we're talking like top MVP vote getter, near the top of MVP ballots for consecutive seasons, and he's horrible now.
Would you buy stock or sell stock?
That's a great question, and I've seen some analysis, and I'm torn, but I this missed me for some reason. I like to think I'm a pretty informed guy, but following all the big names in baseball, I had no idea a recent star of stars out of nowhere within 70 games, not a small sample, is bad.
Mystery player unveiled when we come back. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
It's Toddler Woodstock here at Gallagher Way.
This sun's is out. Unbelievable.
The fog has burned off. The sun is out. We are ostensibly preparing you for the White Sox at Cubs, a two-game series here. And we're brought to you by Wintrust, the presenting sponsor of the Wintrust Crosstown Series. But this portion of the day, how many kids do you think?
Like, I'm shocked.
300-400?
The yard is absolutely full.
Packed.
There's busfuls, like stroller buses packed with like seven or eight kids.
They come on out to the stroller show.
It's the stroller show. This is like the expensive stroller show, and they have had, we've seen the kids on like the stringers.
This is unreal.
Like they're a limit amount of jumbo perch, but yeah, it's actually three-year-olds.
The little handholds that they get, you know,
it's
the
a
walk
stringer.
Along.
He's a stringer. It's what it is. I call it what it is. It's a toddler stringer, and they're bringing them by, but there's performances here. It's Ben Tater and the Tater Tots. And it's a classic, like, Old Town School Wiggle Worms show, and they must love us, right?
Oh, yeah, it's definitely us. They love our brand of humor.
Right. Unfortunately, we've had to cancel all the penis jokes.
All of them. Every single one.
Wait, are we sure all of them?
We can do that one at the end. Other than
which
that,
one?
Everyone's got to go.
Can we take a vote? Yes or no on the penis joke?
We seem to toddlerize the word.
Like the Willy or the Ding Dong. No,
the Wee Wee.
No, they're playing. They're playing here.
Oh, Willy and the Ding Dong?
Yeah.
They're on next. Actually. And then it's Penis Tom, strangely enough. We don't
Which
know
is, how that Well, that's for Mac and Parkins. That's by the time they get on your calendar.
And then Penis Tom comes out.
You're going to do some show songs and a couple of jokes, and the crowd will change.
All right, I'm going to give you some stats here of a player. And this player...
Yeah, refresh this a little bit. Remind me some.
Yeah, this player was really good.
Okay.
Let's just start with his age 23 season.
All right.
Okay? Age 23, this is in 2016. This guy batted .312, on base .363, slugged .462 for an OPS of .825.
Did he have a lot of doubles?
That year, he had 46 doubles.
Okay.
Is that a lot?
That's a lot. It's a lot of doubles.
All right, in 2017, his age 24 season, here's his slash line, .318, .374, .583, an OPS of .957. He had 56 doubles. He made the All-Star team. He was third in MVP voting.
Okay, I know who that player is, but keep going.
Last year, he was an All-Star. He was third in MVP voting. His slash line was .270, .387, .552, an OPS of .939. He had 39 home runs to go along with 38 doubles. Okay, this is a really, really, really solid star player.
Elite.
Elite player. This year, ostensibly the prime of his prime, at age 26, 70 games, 299 plate appearances. That is large sample. His slash line is .204, .298 on base, .304 slugging. An OPS of .602.
This player come out of nowhere a little bit?
Yeah, put in Fangraphs terminology, wins above replacement in starting in 2016, 4.7. 2017, 6.5. Last year, he was an 8-win player. Mm. This year, he is a negative .02 through nearly half a season. Who am I?
This is why it really sucks to be an Indians fan from here
until
the end of time.
You got it.
Until management and ownership changes. Until ownership changes as an Indians fan, it sucks.
That is Jose Ramirez.
This is, you think about this Indians team for just a brief second. If you're a White Sox fan getting yourself ready for Cubs and White Sox this evening and tomorrow evening, we're out here at Gallagher Way doing exactly that. If you are a White Sox fan, you're looking at the future of that division, right? The AL Central. You're looking at a team three and a half games above you in the standings right now in the Cleveland Indians, who are a better team than you are, probably. But they made no investment in their outfield problems this offseason. They want to trade Trevor Bauer. They were thinking about trading Corey Kluber in the offseason. And the owner of the Indians made fans a promise saying that when Francisco Lindor reaches free agency, enjoy the 7 years he had here, because we ain't going to be spending that kind of money. That is a franchise that will wave bye-bye to foundational talent and has had Jose Ramirez fall off the cliff. I'm sorry, that sucks.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Western Conference champion Chicago Wolves would like to thank their loyal fans for making this 25th anniversary so special. Thank you, and see you in October. And this segment brought to you by Comcast Business. Every day, Comcast Business is helping businesses big and small go beyond the expected to do the extraordinary. Because beyond a simple transaction, there is making a customer for life. Comcast Business, beyond fast. Take your business beyond at ComcastBusiness.com. So much reaction on the text line, too, to what some are referring to as not really a Steve Stone interview, but sort of a State of the League address there, where it is clear to me that Stoney feels very, very strongly about the increasing danger to pitchers.
Yeah.
And look, we could talk to Brandon McCarthy about it. We can talk to others who've had a scare. We know, Corey Kluber, he mentioned the broken arm. It happened to Mark Pryor years ago where he had the same thing. Brad Hopp, he shot a liner off of him. But it's never been more striking how dangerous it is, in large part because of how defenseless the pitchers are. It's not just velocity. It's not just how hard and slippery the baseball is through the air. It is pitchers selling out completely for velocity and not being told to come to balance after hurling a ball toward the plate.
Yeah, and it's Major League Baseball throwing up their hands at a complete upheaval in league records in terms of exit velocities and home run totals and pitch velocities. When you have the commissioner and the rest of the front office of Major League Baseball go, we don't know, man. I don't know. It's a baseball. We don't know. We don't know why it's doing this thing. It's inexcusable at that point. You know what I mean? When you can see the future the way that Steve Stone kind of sees it, when you see that potential outcome, you are no longer able to just go, well, we don't know, but enjoy all the dingers. You can't do that anymore. And that's why I think there are a number of changes coming to this game, whether you like it or not.
Midday Midway is coming up as another stringer of toddlers is going by us here, being dragged around.
It's impossibly cute.
That's too cute.
What's going on right now?
that's really adorable.
What's going on?
I have a sport that I didn't know existed, and it's called magnet fishing. And a couple who went magnet fishing and caught something they probably didn't want to catch.
Okay.
Also, when it comes to drinking beer on some of these hot summer days, there's a really good chance you're doing it wrong.
A hit-you-over-the-head sign of apocalypse and a remake you didn't know you needed. The Midday Midway's on the way. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Talk a lot of baseball with Steve Stone and with you about sort of where we are on Cubs Sox, taking the temperature of what this means and discussing all kinds of things with Stoney. He was listening yesterday. We were talking to Ben Lindbergh, and he was bringing up exit velocity, what's going on with the baseball. He's terrified. He said it's inevitable that a pitcher is going to be either put in a coma or killed by a line drive because of what's going on out there. That was sort of the headline from his appearance. Also talked about how Jose Ramirez has suddenly become bad. You did a list because Mike Trout became, what do you say, the sixth?
One of six players. He's the seventh to become a 20 more home run hitter in each of his age 20 to 27 seasons.
Well, this segment brought to you by Door Systems. Call 1-800-THE-DOOR.
Saw this on thebigleague.com. All good things must come to an end, and it happened to be the case today for the popular Reddit page r/NBA streams. Are you familiar with how some of these Reddit feeds? Not the real horrible Reddit feeds. Just the Reddit
4chan
feeds.
Stuff.
No. This is better than that. Anyway, is a big time and well populated Reddit thread on the website, and it was the NBA stream site. The reason that it was quietly shut down, thousands and thousands and thousands of users with, you know, just commentary and, you know, blog kind of stuff on there, but was also on this r/NBA streams page were a bunch of links so that NBA fans could watch live streaming games for free.
So that had to be shut down.
So it has been shut down. It's been operating for quite some time, more time than I thought that it would have been around. It's been around for a handful of years now where NBA fans could just go find links to go stream their favorite teams live. And the reason I bring it up is this. I'm not all that upset with the NBA ending something like this. Obviously, they have the right to. That's not in question here. It's their product, and it's illegal to freely stream these kind of things the way they did. But you notice here that the difference is the NBA has a plan with their streaming capabilities. Adam Silver wants to offer a minute-by-minute subscription for his fans to go watch games. There are options
for gamblers
to find
all
this stuff.
A chunk of things that they can grab in case they bet on a particular segment of the game.
They have a plan to disseminate this product to those who watch it online. Baseball doesn't, and if it does have an overarching plan, it's not a good one. You can do stuff like this and still hold on to your fan base when you offer them a decent other option. Other leagues got to get on board with this whole thing, man. The NBA's out in front of it, and people are playing catch-up.
I'm always down for a new kind of fishing, and apparently this is big across the pond in England. It's called magnet fishing, and it offers fun and intrigue for those who are taking large, powerful magnets and lowering them on ropes or cables to the bottom of lakes and rivers, and then hauling them up to see what they can attract. It also helps rid some of these waterways of junk. Well, there were a couple, Luke Crofts and Louise Harris, who went out to magnet fish on our local river, and they caught forks, and they caught golf clubs, and they caught pocket knives, and then their son and their 19-year-old son retrieved a set of temporary traffic lights that they thought was interesting, and then they pulled up a bomb.
Oh no.
Yes. An unexploded World War II bomb.
Whoa!
It was called a. It's believed to be a Mills grenade, is what. It's certainly bigger than it looks like. It's the size of about a small hornet's nest, about the size of a basketball.
You would measure things in hornet's nests.
That's the way my mind works. So they knew that it was a bomb. I would not have known, but somehow they did. They called the police immediately. And they said that when these are submerged in the water, they're safe. But once they dry out, they can explode. So advised to move as far away from possible. Police closed down the footpath. The bomb disposal unit came in. And they arrived at 4:30 p.m. And it was safely disposed of, safely detonated. But they went fishing and they caught themselves an unexploded World War II bomb.
Are you aware of Thneedville, where the truffula trees live?
That's from The Lorax.
It's from The Lorax. The Lorax is a
little need
furry
orange
guy with a mustache. He spoke for the trees, for the trees have no tongues.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite Dr. Seuss stories back in the day. There was a little animated, I don't know if you call it a short, it was a little longer than that, but it's one of my favorites when I was a little kid. I loved The Lorax. I thought he was goofy looking. I loved the whole message of the thing, and I was really into it. Unfortunately, I have bad news for you as it pertains to Dr. Seuss's The Lorax.
Why? What could be bad news?
Well, according to a San Diego Parks and Recreation Department spokesman, the tree that just recently died, a Monterey cypress tree at the Ellen Browning Scripps Park in La Jolla, California.
La Jolla.
It's La Jolla?
Yes, it's La Jolla.
Right, well,
always has been.
I got Thneedville right.
Yeah.
So anyway, the tree died.
The raccoons live in La Jolla.
They did. The tree
or
died.
The tree died?
The tree that inspired the entire story,
oh,
The Lorax.
Great.
It's dead.
What a perfect symbol of our time.
The tree that inspired The Lorax is dead.
Well, how does it? Trees don't die suddenly.
It's been there for 80 to 100 years. The San Diego Parks and Recreation Department has no idea why it died.
Did an Alabama fan poison it?
There's been some issue with, you know, climate change and a rollback on environmental protection policies. The San Diego Parks and Recreation Department themselves have said aren't great ideas. They are not saying that's why this particular tree died. That inspired The Lorax is dead.
I think it wanted to be dead. I think that tree looked around.
It's asking out.
Yep. I think that tree has opted out because it has seen what has happened. That is just a perfect metaphor for our time.
I'm telling you, man, that's hit you over the head stuff.
Nothing like a hot day and a cold beer and a frosty glass or a frosty mug, right?
Yeah.
No.
I can't think of anything better.
No.
What?
Stop with the frosty mugs. You're doing it wrong for a variety of reasons. Do not drink your beer out of a frosty glass or mug. It sounds cool. It even looks cool. This is according to Lifehacker. They have actually determined that this is the wrong way to do it. Here's why. The biggest reason, cold temperatures kill the flavor in beer. The volatile aromatics of craft beer especially are held at bay. They're basically saying if you're drinking a crappy beer, you can do a frozen glass and it's no big deal because the beer is just supposed to be cold. But if you are paying extra money for a better beer, it should be at a certain temperature. Because if you want to taste it, don't ruin it by putting it in a crazy cold glass. Also, and you have worked in bars before, so you understand that this.
No, yeah.
Since your glass was cleaned before it was put in the freezer, there's a good chance some of the frost on your glass is actually the sanitizer that bars use to clean it.
Ooh.
Because they flash freeze it.
They do, yeah.
And that's not something you want to drink. Also, the glass can pick up a ton of crazy flavors you don't want in your beer. If you look at the bar freezer, you wouldn't eat a sandwich just sitting there on a rack. So that whatever the funk is now frozen to your beer glass. So you don't want that. So it's just like, think about your home freezer. Also, your precious frosty mug may be over-foaming your beer. because carbonation bubbles stick to the frost on the side of your glass. It's going to be a lot foamier than it would otherwise be. You're setting yourself up for failure. If, again, if you have a cheap beer, you don't really care about it, and you like the image of it, and it's 90 degrees, you want to go ahead and do it. But if you actually care about the taste of your beer and the quality of what you're drinking, don't do the frozen, frosty mug.
Where are you at on Rodney Dangerfield's film Back to School?
I'm fine with it. It's okay. Yeah, I got a couple of moments.
Fine with it. It was filmed mostly at Madison, except for the swimming scenes, because Madison doesn't have a swimming team. Or
the
really
only problem I had is that Sally Kellerman delivers every line like this.
Of course she does.
She delivers every single line she says. She says like this.
You may have a chance to relive some of the comedy Back to School, because it has inspired a docu-series that is going to be filmed. The way I read this, according to Variety, they say docu-series, but I think really this is it's a mix of reality television and solid, decent filmmaking technique, as opposed to, you know, kind of the stuff that you'd see slammed on network television or whatever. The movie, the series will be about parents and their children attending the same college at the same time, with the story teasing that some awkward situations come around. Geriatric beer pong is a tease. Mismatched dorm mates, fraternity brother with your dad, and sorority sister with your mom. It's all that kind of thing. Obviously, you've seen.
As long as Billy Zabka's the villain, I'm cool. Because he's that is just it's classic. You know, there's Johnny Lawrence, and then there's
fit that guy.
I forgot his name, but he's still available. He's out there. If you could randomly have Billy Zabka come in there and do Billy Zabka peak era 80s movie villain things.
I don't know if this is enough to pique your interest in the series,
no.
But I would imagine that this might be better than some of the other reality television that just gets thrown out there, perhaps.
Nah, I'm hanging the old I'm not interested sign
Fair
on that.
Fair enough.
Nothing against you, but
it's yours to hang.
The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves, the Western Conference champion. Chicago Wolves would like to thank their loyal fans for making this 25th anniversary so special. Thank you, and see you in October. You should come join us here at what do you call this? It's Toddler Fest. It is just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of kids and moms and strollers and music, and apparently they're putting a movie on for them right now.
Oh, what movie? Do we know what we're watching?
I think it's Reservoir Dogs, actually. It seems an odd choice, but
stuck in the middle with
right.
You.
But they're progressive thinking parents who don't mind a little avant-garde.
That's what the waiver was for when you came into the ballpark. You know, we will be watching one of Tarantino's finest.
It's going to be that and then a Human Centipede. I think it'll be a good day.
Is your child ready to watch a man lose his ear
for them today? So Jonah Carey, we moved him up. It feels like Friday, but it's not really Friday. But we're going to be talking Bulls draft reaction on Friday. So we've got Jonah. We can have him react to what Steve Stone said. Maybe he can figure out why Jose Ramirez is bad. And most importantly, Jonah can give us his thoughts on what it means that the Sox are here to play the Cubs for the next 2 days. The sponsor of the Wintrust Crosstown Series is why we are here today. We are at Gallagher Way because of Wintrust. Come here, join us. Say hi. Free toddlers. We're giving away.
More baseball with Jonah. No, we're not giving away children, Dan. Stop telling
people. First 300 people can have a free toddler.
That was not on the waiver. Jonah Carey is going to talk baseball with us next. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.